we look back at the abortion debate that dominated much of 2022. A leaked opinion, an Indiana abortion ban, and the resulting legal battle. On this special episode of Indiana Week in Review.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Indiana legislative leaders aren't saying just how far they'll go in banning abortions if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns its longstanding abortion rights precedents. A draft opinion from the court that leaked Monday night would allow states to enact full bans.
What little public polling there is on abortion in Indiana shows that a large majority of Hoosiers oppose an abortion ban that doesn't allow exceptions, like in cases of rape, incest, or when the life of the pregnant person is at risk. It's not clear how far Indiana Republican leaders will go if the Supreme Court fully overturns Roe v. Wade. In a statement, Senator Roderick Bray described the leaked opinion as good news, but said lawmakers will monitor further for a final decision. House Speaker Todd Houston said the vast majority of Republican lawmakers want to take further action to ban abortion based on the court's final decision. 100 Republicans out of 110 in the General Assembly signed a letter in March asking the governor to call a special session to align Indiana laws with the Supreme Court's eventual ruling. The Indiana Democratic Party said State House Republicans' push to ban abortions will cost lives.
Chris Mitchum, how far will Indiana Republicans go?
Well, I think it's first important to emphasize that this whole conversation is surrounding a leak, right? So we don't know if this is the final draft. We don't know if other Supreme Court justices are going to want to edit the opinion that we saw. And we don't know if this even has the 5 Supreme Court majority to make this the real thing. So I think it's an entirely separate conversation of what that can do to the integrity of the judicial branch. All that being said, when it comes to Indiana, I think they find themselves in a very unique situation just because I think trigger laws around the country have come to the forefront. People are starting to realize those. People are starting to realize the old statutes that could go back, could be enforced if Roe is overturned. Indiana has neither of those. So that puts them in a very unique situation to, I think, adhere to what the Supreme Court opinion says, which is the Constitution does not open any legal right or any constitutional right for an abortion, so we're going to kick this back to the states and allow the citizens to converse amongst each other and elect people that best represent their views.
Beyond abortion, there's questions about the legal logic that Justice Alito uses in this ruling and whether it could be used to strike down interracial marriage, gay rights in general, school segregation, and any number of other things. So how far does this movement from conservatives go?
Oh, I think it goes way too far. And I know you dodged that question very aptly, but you dodged the question. The fact of the matter is, if the Supreme Court kicks this back to the states, Indiana's going to do whatever it can do. And that means it may even criminalize it. If they were doing it sensibly, what they ought to do is have hearings all around the state and actually listen to what people think about this. But they're not going to do that. They're going to come in and one day in one of their closed caucuses, they're going to present a piece of legislation. They're not going to allow any second reading amendments, and they're going to go ahead and enact it. And it's going to be as poorly thought out as Texas is. You know, you get into these situations. Are we going to prosecute doctors? Are we going to have 2 different countries where you can have an abortion if you live on one side of the Wabash River, but you can't have it if you live on the other side of the Wabash River? And if you go across, can you be prosecuted then in Indiana for doing something that was legal in Illinois? And if the doctor performs it there or sends you there, could he then be prosecuted? Could he have to avoid the state of Indiana on the way back to the East Coast? It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. And the fact that the ideology of the Republican Party, because this is owned by the Republican Party, and that Supreme Court represents the Republican Party, and it is frightening. And it is frightening to so many young women who are going to face very difficult choices. You know, I've never met somebody who's pro-abortion, never in my life. But there are situations that call for it. I mean, if you have a pregnancy that's doomed to death and doomed to suffering for the mother or the child, it's the idea that that legislature, composed primarily on the Republican side of old white men, can dictate to women what they are allowed or not allowed to do is frightening.
Well, I'll respond to that. I think it's hard to group them all as old white men. You've seen every single major abortion-related piece in the legislature has been championed by women.
How many women do you have in your caucus out of that 70? What, 10%? Maybe?
The question of will Indiana ban abortions or not seems fairly simple. Yes. There's a lot of other things, though,
yeah,
that could be part of
that. Yeah, I mean, question if they're going to just ban it outright or if they'll do like an 8-week, you know, anything under 8 weeks. I think the bigger question will be around any exceptions they have. You know, do you have an exception for rape or incest? Most of the Republicans I'm talking to are like, are saying no. But there still seem to be a bit more support for the exception for the life of the mother. So I think a lot of the debate will be around that topic.
And raise the idea of hearings around the state or the legislative process here. Would you expect this to go pretty quickly once it's made possible?
I do. I think it would probably be pretty similar to what they did with redistricting, just that this would be a special session most likely, so they're not going to be hanging around following the usual calendars. I mean, I'm sure they will take some public input, yes, but I'm sure they will want to avoid much of the second reading amendments as much as they can, because that is going to get really messy. I think a lot of these people have ran on being pro-life, but now we're getting down to what does that actually mean? How anti-abortion are you when it comes to the exceptions and in terms of the timing limits on these things? So I don't think we have a clear picture of what this legislation will look like. But I know that it's probably going to be pretty messy because you still have lawmakers who are going to completely disagree on what this should look like.
The Supreme Court of the United States overturned the near 50-year so-called super precedent Roe v. Wade, opening the ban of abortion care to the discretion of states. Indiana lawmakers have planned for this outcome for several weeks following the leak of a draft opinion. And Delaney, what's your initial reaction to the overturn of Roe v. Wade?
I mean, it's horrible. Donald Trump got exactly what he wanted. He wanted to pit Americans against each other. He wants dissension. He wants anger. He wants bitterness. He wants hatred. And that's what he got when he appointed those three people to the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, the fact that we're restricting the rights of women 50 years later, when we had time after time, we were told precedent determines, and then they basically falsified their testimony in front of the committee. So I'm really concerned. I'm concerned for young women. You know, there'll be protests. There's going to be a protest in Indiana tomorrow at the State House. People should go to that and let their views be heard, because this is going to be a terrible time for this country. I mean, between the issue of who has guns, and we're not allowed to restrict the number of people killed by guns, and now we don't have rights over our own bodies. I mean, it's a terrible time. And I, frankly, until Donald Trump was elected, I never thought it would happen.
Michael Bryan, what is your reaction to the overturn of Roe v. Wade? I mean, this has been a GOP talking point for decades.
Yeah, and a Christian right effort for since the day Roe v. Wade was a reality. So, look, I think the reality that we're going to enter isn't where the far right thinks, well, that's all done. We're at the beginning of another part of this now. I think in Indiana, well, just what I know is Indiana, we'll have to be thoughtful and intentional about how we go forward. There is encouragement if you're worried about a complete wipeout of abortion rights in Indiana. We went through literally an entire legislative session this year of very extreme proposals being defeated on the floor, mm-hmm. defeated administratively or procedurally. And then the reaction to that was a primary season from the far right that almost exclusively failed. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, I think, a little bit in Indiana that we now have a House majority and a General Assembly that can look at this and say, we need to be thoughtful about how we, I know we're going to talk about this more next week, but thoughtful about how we chart the path forward, how we rethink investments in public health and women's health, and support around the fact that we're going to have, and this is the positive for the pro-life community, we're going to have more children born, and that requires support that we didn't really have to take seriously or didn't take seriously before that I hope we do.
John Schwanis, I mean, Indiana is ranks horribly for maternal mortality and infant mortality. What can we expect out of lawmakers?
Nothing.
Hey, that's a good ventriloquist act there.
That's the truth.
There will be a great emphasis, certainly, on health and public health, if only because the governor has signaled as much. He has created, you know, task forces to look at this, to come up with proposals, and there is money to fund it. However, when you look at some of these specific types of things, there may not be an appetite for that among Republicans. I think the primary reason during this past session that none of those extreme measures that Mike talked about prevailed is simply because leadership was able to say, we can wait. There's no reason to go ahead and do anything now.
Yeah,
because
that wasn't good enough for the crowd they were trying to appease in that. Because they looked around the rest of the country and you had trigger laws passed in every, in states that are similar to politically
situated. But still,
situated.
I think it was leadership wanting to say, let's wait until we see what the nation's highest court does. As far as this notion of a thoughtful reflection on I don't see that happening on this issue. I think the lines are just too stark. You have people in the Republican caucus for whom this is raison d'etre. This is the primary, this and guns, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think they're really in a mood to sit back and
suggesting a thoughtful reflection on the question of life. I was suggesting we've taken steps in years past to restrict sex education in schools, to restrict infant mortality funding, and now we are entering a phase where we are at the beginning of another part of this, and it does allow us to reset the investments we're making in that space and how we're thinking about support for children and mothers politically
is that to this point anti-abortion forces have been united. It's a monolith. They basically have said, for the most part, this is our mission, this is our calling, this is our mantra, be done with it. Now we'll start to see divisions within that because we'll see some who want to prosecute women. We'll see some who want to be very active in going after doctors, intercepting mail, preventing women or trying to prevent women from going across state lines. And there are other people in the pro-life movement who are saying, no, we never have advocated that.
And
we don't want that.
Contraception. That's next.
So I'm just saying the divisions that we used to see on the other side
are now going to have our initial reaction.
I'm sorry, my distinguished colleague, I wanted to throw one thing in here, which is there was talk about whether we're going to support these children who are going to be born. And I will say that House Speaker Todd Houston, in his statement today, made very clear that a ban will go through at the same time as additional services and dollars to help support things. And it could be in updating WIC payments. It could be in, a million different things. So that even makes the special session a little harder because we're also apparently going to appropriate some money for some sort of services, or at least that's what he has staked out for his chamber.
Indiana Republican lawmakers voted late last Friday to force thousands more people to give birth every year in a state with some of the worst maternal and infant mortality rates in the country.
Abortions would only be allowed if the pregnant person's serious health or life is at risk, if there's a lethal fetal anomaly up to 20 weeks, and in cases of rape or incest, but only up to 10 weeks. Republican Senator Liz Brown says the ban is the culmination of years of battles.
We will always have more work to do because we need to make it unimaginable to end an unborn baby's life.
Democratic Senator Shelley Yoder says women shouldn't have to ask for control over their own bodies.
It's not compassionate. It's not pro-life. It's pro-punishment. Punishment of women who dare to live as freely as men.
Governor Eric Holcomb quickly signed the bill.
Anne Delaney, Indiana voters have sent Republican supermajorities to the state house for nearly a decade. Isn't this what they wanted?
Oh, I don't think this is what they wanted. And they knew they were sending Republicans to the state house. They didn't know they were sending cruel people to the state house. They didn't even want to take a non-binding referendum to find out what voters wanted because they were afraid of what happened in Kansas, which is not as progressive a state, I hope, as Indiana. What they did here, they had 49 people in the House caucus, 49 Republicans, say that that 10-year-old should have been forced to carry the
39.
Offspring.
39. 39 people voted for
it. Oh, it was only 39? 39. 49.
But it's more than half of them.
More than half of them said that she should be forced to carry that child to term and then be cut open because at age 10 you can't deliver vaginally. So that's their idea of what their religion demands, and they want to make everyone else do that. And they did it so quickly that they didn't even think through what they were doing. I don't mean in terms of the limitations and all. She probably, a child that age may not even know she's pregnant by 10 weeks. But that issue aside, they didn't repeal any of the other dumb ideological laws they passed. She's going to have to make two visits. She's going to have ultrasound. She's going to have to be lied to and told that the fetus can feel pain. She's going to be lied to and told that there's a pill she can take to reverse the abortion, and on and on and on. That's how poorly drafted and how poorly thought out and how quickly they rushed rush to judgment. And they don't care what voters think.
In the Senate floor debate over that amendment to take out the rape and incest exception, Senator Mike Gaskell, who voted to take out the exceptions, said on the floor, like, some of us may lose our seats for this vote. Do you think he's right? Do you think there will be electoral consequences for Republicans over this bill?
We'll see. We'll see. I think, well, in part, I mean, this came late, and Democrats, you know, characteristically don't have their act together and had no candidates ready to run and have very incomplete. You know, there's just not a lot of competitive races around the state that are well organized and well funded. So we'll see, though. I mean, Kansas, that was a surprise outcome in Kansas, right? That's what brought, you know, that's what encouraged Democrats to bring that amendment to try to, you know, derail this and go to referendum. And, you know, I think Kansas thought that this is a no-brainer. We're restricting abortion, right? And that obviously turned out not to be the case. And something is going to be just like Barack Obama and health care reform was a catalyst for Southern Indiana Democrats to finally start consistently voting Republican, there could be a catalyst that moves some of these voters, or certainly in the middle or in the suburban moderates, could move them around. So I don't want to sleep on that theory politically. What was interesting in this debate in Indiana was the, you know, first experiment in a red state talking about this was you. With all the states that had trigger laws, that was just a mindless political vote, right? It didn't matter. Roe was in the background. What changed and what Indiana proved and showed is that this is a hell of a lot more nuanced than just voting for a trigger law when Roe v. 2 years ago. And it's a political vote. It's scored by, you know, your state's right to life lobby, you know. This was theoretical. I mean, you had, it was theoretical, and now it's not, right? So yeah. They had to pay very close attention to what they were doing.
Yeah, Abdul Hakim Shabazz has been fond of using the analogy the last few weeks of the dog chasing the car.
Yeah.
It caught the car, and now it doesn't know what to do.
Right. So they had to think through a lot of these things. They didn't really think through before. I think they really did. There were hundreds of amendments. I mean, these guys were all over the board.
What about all the other hurdles? I want to ask about this aspect.
We should look at
that.
I want to talk about this aspect of it too. Nobody tested or testified in support of this law. No one, not a single human being, honestly testified in support of SB 1. Over 6.5 hours and 61 people in the Senate, and over 8 hours or 7 hours and more than 100 people in the House. No one, because obviously abortion rights advocates didn't like the law at all. And anti-abortion activists said it didn't go far enough. They want the rape and incest exceptions taken out, as an example. Is this debate over?
I don't think it's over. And in fact, in terms of the political fallout, I think it is difficult to say, will there be dramatic change in the numbers, the breakdown politically in the House and the Senate, if, say, this coming fall. But I think what we can say with certainty, and we're not talking about who's right morally and who's wrong. I'm talking about the politics, okay? This is the high water mark for those who have opposed Roe v. Wade and wanted tight restrictions. It doesn't get any better than this for them politically, because from now on, what gets attention? A baby who in the past might not have been born is now born and everybody's happy. Is that going to get any coverage? No. Just by definition, no. The plane didn't crash.
Right.
The plane, you know. But is there another 10-year-old? A 9-year-old.
Yeah.
What about the woman who sought an illegal abortion or tried to do it herself and botched it and died a very painful death? What about, you know, the person, this horrifying, you know, assault that, and granted, there are exceptions, but maybe somebody's not in the window of the, you know, doesn't meet all the criteria and have the affidavit notarized and signed properly and is still the victim of incest or rape. I can see a million stories reminding people that this is perhaps cruel and draconian and not in the best interest of women, and there's no flip side to it. Even Republicans have to admit, this is as good as it gets for them. They only erode from here on that issue.
To the question I asked Mike about will there be fallout, when we spoke to House Democratic Leader Phil Giaquinta and Cherish Pryor on the day the bill passed in the House, I think I was the one who asked the question, like, you know what the maps look like as well as I do. Is there any reason to think that you will actually have wins off of this? And the answer came back, we don't think we're going to get a majority. Nobody thinks that. But they think they can break the supermajority in the House. Are they right?
They'd have to flip four or five races. That might be a little high for one cycle, especially, and Mike is right, a lot of those races don't even have a competitor, like, you know.
Or at least a realistic competitor,
right.
Even if there's a name on the ballot.
So maybe at this time period, that might be a little, I wouldn't be surprised if a couple seats flipped. People are pretty motivated about this right now, and, they were still outside the State House with the megaphone just yesterday, on this issue. So we'll see how it goes.
Indiana's near-total abortion ban has been temporarily halted. Just 3 days after a judge heard arguments in a lawsuit challenging the ban, she ruled that the law likely violates the Indiana Constitution. Judge Kelsey Hanlon, who ran for the bench as a Republican, said there is a recognized right to bodily autonomy in the Indiana Constitution. The abortion ban has limited exceptions for risks to the life and serious health of the pregnant person, for some lethal fetal anomalies, and in some cases of rape or incest. Hanlon says the law goes too far in restricting the right to bodily autonomy by making that autonomy largely contingent upon first experiencing extreme sexual violence or significant loss of physical health or death. The ruling means that for now, abortion is once more legal for anyone up to 20 weeks. The state will appeal the decision.
Mike O'Brien, this came down fast. Are you surprised by the decision?
I'm surprised that an Owen County Republican made the decision instead of a Monroe County Democrat. So let's start there. I don't think it's surprising. This question over whether privacy is a right in the Indiana Constitution has a spotty history. Pro Roe v. Wade being overturned, with the Court of Appeals affirming it, meaning abortion is a protected right. The Supreme Court vacated it. That produced two dissents that had two opposite opinions. So the idea that this question needs to be answered isn't a shock to me. It shouldn't really be. You're hopeful that courts don't have an injunction on a law that was passed if you're supportive of it, but answering this question, I think, should be important. It's important for the pro-life community as it should be for the pro-choice community.
This opinion could have gone obviously one of two ways, and as Mike just pointed out, we have this debate about 15 years ago or so between two Indiana Supreme Court justices in dissents, mm-hmm. one saying, no, there's no right, one saying, yes, there is. And she mm-hmm. went with the yes, there is crowd.
Right.
What's the likelihood that this current Supreme Court goes with the no, there isn't?
Well, I think she thinks that the likelihood is that they're going to go with yes, there is, which because it's a preliminary injunction, and you have to demonstrate a likelihood of prevailing on the merits in order to get that. So she clearly, with her reasoning, came up with the notion that, all of these rights, as we've seen over the course of however many years this country's been in existence, evolve. And what may not have been, may not have been an attitude shared by a lot of people 50 years ago is now shared by a lot of people. And she's absolutely right. In the past, in other kinds of situations, the state courts have determined that the rights guaranteed by the Indiana Constitution don't actually mirror the rights provided by the federal Constitution. And in many cases, we're much more liberal about the rights that we recognize under the Indiana Constitution. So it's not surprising at all. I think as a Republican from Owen County, she deserves a lot of credit for following what she thinks the law is and should be. And it obviously will have some political risk to her in that county. But nonetheless, she did the right thing, and I think she deserves a fantastic amount of credit.
One of the things she points out in the ruling is, and something that Solicitor General Tom Fisher pointed out in the arguments, which was, even if you believe there's a right to privacy or whatever you want to call it in the Indiana Constitution, in that Article 1, Section 1, they really buried it. Even if you think that, abortion was banned in Indiana at the time the Constitution was written, and so therefore it cannot possibly be part of what's a protected right in the Constitution. And her point is, things have changed in the last, however, 200 plus years, or 100 and something 100 years. So, yeah, I'm not good at math.
We can tell.
But the point is, things have changed. Is that argument going to hold up?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fact is, it's like women couldn't even vote when we, started this. So you can't really compare everything to exactly the situation when the Constitution was written. So I do think even so-called strict constructionists have to recognize that, life has changed. And the reason abortion and women and might not have been mentioned is because, you know, it was just never even thought of back then. Yeah.
The Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita's office is appealing this, hopefully directly to the Supreme Court. Their hope is that it will go directly to the Supreme Court. It seems like a good chance that might happen on something like this. The Indiana Supreme Court doesn't really get into controversial issues like this very often. That's just not what the state court system generally covers. Not to say that they don't do any controversial things. Heck, last year they had Holcomb versus the legislature, which was pretty darn controversial. But this is a very different level from all of that. Do you think, realistically, that will affect their deliberation?
Well, as I've said before, they're not sealed in some sort of, you know, mayonnaise jar, impervious to any kind of input from the society around them. They are, last time I checked, all living, breathing human beings. So that's not to say they're going to be swayed by it. I think they will do their best to interpret the Constitution as the best they possibly can. Kudos to her for stepping up and doing what a judge is supposed to do, which is, you know, whether it's calling balls and strikes or, you know, as Justice Roberts at the federal level likes to say, at least she was willing to step behind home plate and make some calls.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at WFYI.org/IWIR or on the PBS video app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.